Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and with me as always is Steve. How are you doing?
John, happy holiday season, my friend.
Oh, you're right. It's already December. Welcome to December.
Absolutely.
Where all the cryptocurrencies are going to make a mad rush as people get more optimistic. Let's see.
That's what you say. By the way, crypto, good present for Christmas or no?
Oh, it depends on the person, I guess. I would take crypto as a present. That'd be kind of interesting, actually.
Give Aunt Sally some Solana.
If you want some long-term investment, sure.
Uncle Paul gets some Polygon. Everyone gets a piece of this.
Do they have gift cards? They should have gift cards for this.
No. I don't think they do, but I
but then the price actually would vary. It would be like, you know, one half of an ether or something. And then you don't know what you're going to pay when you get there. Worthless fiat currency anyway.
And then they will charge you, you know, a quarter of your value will be gas fees. So boom.
And if it's Bitcoin, you have to wait at the register for half an hour till it goes through.
All right, so I think we have solved this. No crypto gift cards for Christmas.
No, I'll take it. I'll take any gift cards. Info@fintechnewscast.com. Just send me the code. We're good.
Send it our way.
So this week we'll be getting into some of the news around the cryptos and changes going on, kind of like our pre-holiday news episode. And as usual, there is tons of stuff going on. You know, the most surprising, actually, it should not be surprising at all anymore. And I refuse to be surprised from now on. But Square changed its overall name to Block. And the reason I shouldn't be surprised is because that's the trend now, right? Google kind of started it with the Alphabet thing. Facebook just did Meta. So I should be expecting this kind of thing.
It's going to happen. And by the way, I fully expect Dorsey to go full laser eyes on Twitter for sure. Now that he's focused solely on Square and not Twitter, he's going to go full on crypto, bro.
Well, he's been kind of a crypto bro. Yeah. But this is full on. So he left like day-to-day management of Twitter, and now he's going to be focusing 100% on Square, Block, and all that now?
Exactly. So basically, he was a part-time CEO, both at Square and Twitter, which is, you know, if you can do it, that's fine. But I think that kind of dilutes the value of your time. And it's also, you know, this is a really fun metric if you're not a Twitter shareholder or employee. But guess what the Twitter price at IPO was?
I have no idea. Never.
42.
Okay.
Low 40s, 43 or so. Guess what Twitter's stock price is right now?
17.
42 or 43. Same. Unchanged whatsoever. So the company, I think, has underperformed. It's not, you know, for a tech company to have that sort of price stagnation is really bad.
Are you
sure
there's no splits or anything in there, right?
Oh, 100%. So I'm hoping that if you're a Twitter shareholder or an employee and you have Twitter options, that Jack's departure leads to good things for you.
Okay. And it reflects a total change, not a total change, but some significant changes at Square, which is sounds like it's going to go full crypto or embracing anyway, along with everything else.
I think they're going to further embrace crypto. I think they've gone from a POS, which is that point of sale device that you see at a deli or a coffee shop, to now just a whole host of solutions for small businesses and consumers. Cash App is incredibly popular right now. That's also a Square product. I think we'll see a lot more crypto in their offerings for both consumers and small businesses.
You know, they're the ones that bought Tidal, right? I still don't understand that.
That one actually, I think there may be an NFT play in there as well. If you think of the ways in which, just how we pay for royalties for music. You can have a song be an NFT, or there has to be an image, maybe like an album, some sort of artist rendering of a song or something. I think there's some interesting kind of still nebulous use cases that have to do with NFTs and Tidal and Square as well. And again, all will be on a blockchain because it is Jack Dorsey after all.
That's the future, one way or another.
That is the future.
We don't know exactly how it'll look like or who will win, but leaning into the future.
Yes. I just hope, by the way, that now that Jack only has one job, he'll be able to eat more than one meal a day.
Is that his thing? Does he does the what is it? Intermittent fasting?
I think that's his thing. He only eats one meal per day and he walks to work every day, like 2 miles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hand over the Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I hope he changes his route every day. Yeah. There are a lot of Silicon Valley types that are investing in those longevity startups and trying to live forever. Yeah. It's like, I just saw something spinning off topic a little bit. Arnold Schwarzenegger saying he's so angry that he's going to die because he's got such a great life. It's going to end. I'm just angry. I'm upset. I have it all.
That's what happens if you're rich. You want to prolong your life, which makes sense, right? If you're wealthy.
I'm looking for it to, you know, wrap up as soon as possible.
I'm looking for the sweet release of death, yeah. My friend.
Oh man. So he's one of those trying to live forever. But yeah, he looks kind of like an eccentric type, and so he'll be open, definitely the kind of person who's open to a lot of expansion and new ideas at Block. I wonder if they're going to be called Blockheads now. All the employees at Square.
Yeah. I'm an ex-Blockhead. Hi.
Oh, are you a Blockhead? Oh, we had a Block wedding. We met there at Square. Huh. Or Charlie Brown's. I guess he's the Blockhead, right?
He's the Blockhead. Yeah. That's
Charlie Brown's. Or sell those shirts with the little stripy thing he has.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. Well, let's see what comes out of that. You know, one interesting thing I saw lately is this rise of Avalanche, you know, that cryptocurrency. Oh, I don't know if you've seen it beyond the price kind of thing, but I wanted to look into it a little bit. It's one of those that started pretty recently. The token itself came out just over a year ago, September of 2020. It's along with this wave of Ethereum killers who are doing things faster, better, cheaper than Ethereum, but still leveraging everything that Ethereum's done. A lot in this case, actually. Avalanche actually uses the Ethereum virtual machine. So you can still use the same program. So, you know, designed to take advantage of existing infrastructure to build up their network and very finance and institution and commercial focus.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that in just a recent news with that they're partnering with Deloitte to improve security, speed, and accuracy, in quotes, of FEMA funding by building more efficient disaster relief platforms.
So how do you improve security, speed, and accuracy for FEMA?
Blockchain funding? It. Yeah.
But how?
You can trace everything. You can track everything. So I guess Deloitte's been contracted by FEMA, and then Deloitte's brought on Ava Labs, the development side of the house, to build this out. So it's kind of a vote of confidence. The price bounced a little bit on that. It's down a bit since the past few days. But it's pretty interesting. I like the idea of these new blockchains, new systems that are designed just to solve the problems, just to be institution, commercial, and scalable. In this case, it's made up of a primary network, which is actually three different blockchains. So the X chain is the creation, management, and transaction of the tokens. The C chain houses the smart contracts. And like I said, that's the Ethereum virtual machine compliant or just uses the same Solidity development language. So you can use ETH decentralized apps on the C chain blockchain. And then there's the P chain, which is the management, coordinates all the validator nodes and the staking mechanism. And which means you can, yeah. So this makes it super scalable. So you can basically attach your own subnet, your own blockchain attached to the main network, the primary network, and build your own consensus models. You can do permissioned or permissionless. You can have your own virtual machines. You can have completely separate rules on a subnet. So let's say if you're some company and you operate in different states and countries, you can have a different subnet, a different blockchain, essentially, for each jurisdiction that'll behave differently for each of the laws and rules in any jurisdiction that you're operating from. But Avalanche is designed for specifically financial institutions. And then it becomes useful for the same reasons, the flexibility, scalability, and the friendliness with the programming and smart contracts that it's designed for from the start. And security is part of that. So on Ethereum, you have to have 51% of the staking tokens and or 51% of the Bitcoin token. But for Avalanche, in order to take over the network, you would need to control 80% of the network,
which is basically impossible, right?
Yeah. Oh, it makes it much, much more difficult, right? So 51% is already pretty good, but 80% is even more secure, and they did that for security purposes. And then the other big question I know you're going to ask me is how fast, how cheap?
Yes.
So you can do 4,500 transactions per second per subnet. So if you add 1,000 subnets, you're basically can do anything you want.
You're basically Visa at that point.
Much more. Sure. So it's very scalable and designed to be under 3 seconds in what they call the finality clock.
That's actually pretty good. I know that I like that we have become, we have arrived at a moment where all these blockchain stuff actually makes sense. There's more real world applications. The government is getting involved, and it's beyond sort of the initial hype that we saw, say 3-4 years ago. So always good to see actual use cases being put to use in a way.
Soon you'll be paying. Remember before, like people were talking about making payments on Bitcoin, day-to-day transactions, but
that's not going to happen.
Nowhere near scale. And it's not designed for that kind of high-speed transaction. Yeah, definitely there's going to be specialized blockchains for different purposes, which is a good thing to do. And the prices reflected that. So it's shot up. I think it was challenging Dogecoin for what, number 10th spot? Doge might be down a little bit.
Doge is certainly down. I know from experience. Doge is very down.
But it got the hype for a few days. Let's see if that happens and some new competitor is out there. There's so many cryptocurrencies. I take a look. I just look at the top 100 on World Coin Index, actually. But I know that's even a tiny sliver of what's going on out there. So there might be some, you know, even better. I don't know how much better it can be, almost free and really fast, that will catch fire with development, with getting software solutions, of which Ethereum is still the king. And Ethereum is supposed to move to proof of stake from proof of work, which is one of the main things that are holding it back from that scalability. And okay. I should point out that all of these new solutions, these new commercial solutions are all proof of stake. They just get rid of that whole proof of work. It's just a wildly inefficient energy-wise. So these all use like 1/10,000th of the energy of Bitcoin, even if they had the same transactions. And there's variations on that. Avalanche has their own Avalanche consensus model. But the point is to get away from everybody doing all the computing all the time. And that's going to address that whole carbon output, address all those ESG concerns. And it also makes the system slower too. So I think proof of work sometime down the line will be like a legacy inefficient solution that gets overtaken by proof of stake and other things that don't require that.
What do we want? Proof of stake. When do we want it? Early next year.
Something like that. Well, Ethereum's a big one. So that's going to reduce a lot of carbon output. But Bitcoin is still at least twice the market cap and back and forth on the transactions, still putting out a huge amount of inefficient energy and carbon output and all those things you don't want in any kind of efficient, commercial, scalable solution.
So the question for me is, we're moving from proof of stake to proof of work. Yay, Ethereum. Makes sense. Let's do it.
From proof of work to proof of stake. Yep.
Sure. The other one. Yeah. What does that mean for my Ethereum holdings? Is that going to go up? And if so, by how much? Should I buy some more?
I absolutely guarantee it will go up. You heard it here first.
This is not financial advice.
Yeah. It's over $4,000 now, just over 4,200-ish. But yeah, I think that's going to drive money going from Bitcoin, this non-ESG, non-climate change, carbon-intensive, energy-intensive, not scalable solution to proof of stake. And then Ethereum will be the largest proof of stake solution out there. So it'll attract a lot. I think it'll come close or surpass Bitcoin. That flippening will happen on market cap.
All right, folks, because you heard it here. You heard it here. The flipping is going to happen.
It will happen. Yeah. I think so. So
if it doesn't, please send your concerns to john@fintechnewscast.com.
It's not like it's out there. I'm not saying anything out there in public, right?
No, not at all. This is just a chat between you and I.
So what else is going on out there?
Lots of things going on as well. Over on the digital banking space, which is one that I followed most closely, we recently saw news that N26, the German digital bank, is pulling out of the US.
Oh, so reverse hype. In the fintech world.
Exactly. Yeah. So they came in, they had what I thought was a fairly undifferentiated product. They gained something like 500,000 customers in the US, which is, you know, a pretty sizable number, just not for a bank as well. And in the US, they're competing, of course, with, you know, with your Chimes, your Vero Money, as well as the other German or Brazilian banks as well. And they just couldn't cut it.
Is Nubank in here in the US already?
I believe Nubank is in the US as well. Yeah.
They have the largest market cap of any fintech in Brazil, right?
They do. Probably. By a mile. Oh, although they recently raised new funding at they had a down round.
Okay, it's not all. You're the downer today.
I am a downer. I'm sorry. Yeah.
But I've seen this year it seems like the pullback from the U.S. market time 2021. Like HSBC sold off a bunch of their branches to focus on Asia. Mitsubishi UFJ is selling off Union Bank. Mm-hmm. Again, I think the focus on their home market in Japan. And there was somebody else. I forget who that was. Some Euro. I can't remember. But yeah, so this is yet another one on the fintech side as well.
Everyone's pulling from the US market.
They're focusing.
Yeah, refocusing. Yeah. It's funny because our friend from Forbes, Ron Shrevlin, did an article on Nubank, or rather on N26 and their failures. And he basically failures, of course. And he basically attributes their failures to three things: incorrect market assumption. And this is basically the argument that all the fintechs make, which is that your bank experience sucks. And I find, as a customer of a mega bank, that actually it's pretty okay. Sure, the UI could be better. Sure, it could be prettier. But I find myself sort of not finding much pull from a fintech other than just, you know, a cool card or whatever. So my bank mostly works.
So part of their approach was negative instead of saying all the good things you could have by going to them?
Exactly. It was basically your banking experience sucks. Come with us. We have a cool app and a cool card. Sure, if you're into that, that makes sense. But from a functionality perspective, I find that the mega banks have pretty good apps. They kind of
and there's already alternatives, I guess. If you wanted to leave, you're already maybe at Vero or somebody else.
Exactly, which is actually a great segue to my next point, or rather Ron's next point, which is that N26 also just didn't have a lot of product and segment differentiation. They were seen sort of as, you know, this amorphous blob of Chime, Vero, N26, Nubank, all kind of doing the same thing. And I think you really have to key in on differentiation if you want to succeed in the US, which they did not do. Yeah. And then this is the last one, the one that I really, really love as well. They just didn't do any marketing whatsoever. They only spent Chime spent $100 million on marketing, and N26 spent a grand total of zero. They had no marketing whatsoever in the US. Yeah. They relied essentially only on word of mouth and on referral marketing.
Well, they got what they paid for.
They did. They got a big fat zero from this. So,
and they still got 500,000 customers. So I assume it's not.
They did. It's surprising how successful they were given their
They had zero budget. Marketing. Didn't I see a bus ad for them? N26. I mean, there was somebody else.
I'm sure you did. I mean, they all kind of blend together, right?
Yeah. It could have been something
That's
else.
Part of the failure there is that they didn't market as well. Farewell, Nubank. Best of luck in Europe. I hope you can
see
make
you
it.
In a couple of years.
See you in a couple of years, maybe. Yeah, or not.
Well, they're still growing very well in Europe, right?
I have no idea. They did say that they're going to refocus their priorities on the European market. And I think they're sort of competing. Yeah, it's all about the refocus. I think they're competing with the Revoluts of the world in the UK and Germany, but who knows?
Right. Yeah, yeah. They got some competition at home for sure.
They do. I think that the whole notion of just creating a bank for the sake of having this new experience and this new UX UI thing, it's kind of a faulty assumption. I think that you really have to make sure that you have a product that's, or a business rather, that actually has fundamentals that you can grow, that they can be profitable. And the idea of growing based on VC funding is just not, I think we'll see a pullback in the sort of, in a pullback from this idea that we can sort of finance growth with VC money, and then eventually we'll make our business more sustainable.
If you need some strategic help, Ron Shevlin or Steve at FinTech Newscast.
That's me.
Yeah.
C'est moi.
Yeah. And you got to have some marketing. I mean, you can't go without anything. I mean, people trust brands. It's that shortcut to, we're not going to totally rip you off and screw you over. Other people trust us.
We're trusted. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Who doesn't trust anybody? Is it Gen X or?
Oh, or God. Great question.
Who's the least trusting?
I'm a younger Gen X. I think that I distrust and hate everyone. Yeah. Yeah. Hatred for all. Hatred for all.
Yeah.
Hate the boomers.
Saying, well, I agree.
Hate the Gen Zs.
But I think millennials, like the younger set, are kind of jaded, right? I think I've seen that somewhere.
I think they're jaded for different reasons. Yeah. So there was a recent story that came out looking at the fastest growing brands by age cohort, right? Looking at Gen Z, millennials,
fastest
and boomers, of course.
Growing brands in reputation or sales?
In awareness and reputation and growth in the US.
So who's done the smart marketing? Let's see.
Well, it's really interesting that a lot of them are actually fintech, oddly enough. So for Gen Z, in the top 20, you had both Coinbase and Bitcoin, which is Bitcoin even a brand? I don't know. But it's up there with HBO, with Wendy's, with Chipotle, Zillow, and Snickers bars randomly. So
once you get up there with Wendy's and Chipotle, you've made it.
Then you know you're in it to win it. Absolutely. Going over to the millennial side, also a lot of fintech, but a different sort of fintech as well. For millennials, their fastest growing brands of 2021 were actually Venmo was one of them, Affirm, Discover, Afterpay, and JP Morgan Chase.
Huh. You got to throw one bad one in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do they know all the, we should, yeah. Maybe they should list out all the compliance violations along with
all the terrorist financing that they've done.
That'll kill their reputation pretty quick.
Yeah.
Anyway, but JP Morgan. But Affirm's like, you know, we always mention them as the poster boy for painting themselves with the ESG and the good guy image.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Aspiration.
Oh, Aspiration. There we go. Slightly different. Again, differentiate your names and your products. But it's funny that, yeah, for millennials, basically almost half of the brands were actually fintech brands. So again, Venmo, Cash App, Affirm, JP Morgan, Credit Karma as well. A lot of fintech in this space as well. So it seems like people are paying as much attention to fintech as they are to Chipotle and fast food.
I wonder if they do a lot of social media marketing.
I bet they do.
More than others. I see the Gemini ad come up on YouTube and some social media. They're not in there, right?
They're not in there. No, they're
more,
not.
Yeah. They're not day-to-day use kind of thing.
They're
or
not.
Robinhood. I wonder how Robinhood would fare.
They actually are not. Well, I guess they grew so fast in 2020 or so much in 2020 that I don't think they would have been able to grow as much in 2021, right? They
were okay. These are fastest increasing. Okay.
Right. And now for the cohort nearest and dearest to my heart, the Gen X's, also significant amount of fintech as well. You see Venmo in here. You see Amex and Chime. In addition to, of course, you know, HBO Max, and of course, the number one brand for Gen Xers in 2021, Moderna. Oh, no.
Huh? That's interesting.
You
don't think of the vaccines or pharmaceuticals as a brand. You know, you just get what you get, and that's it.
Yeah.
Survive.
I guess with this crazy year, yeah. It was.
And these
not
are all
unexpected.
Positive. Oh, so this is the number one, like. Fastest growing positive or just awareness?
I think it's just awareness of a brand.
Okay.
It's only awareness.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who heard of Moderna before?
Exactly. They're kind of a new company anyway. Yeah. And now for the boomers, the last cohort here, the boomers. So boomers, not as much in the fintech space. They did have Cash App on there as well as TikTok randomly, but also, of course, the PGA Tour, because why not?
Okay, well, that makes sense, yeah.
That one kind of tracks, yeah. So it's interesting because, as I mentioned earlier, it seems like you now TikTok is one that, I'm sure they see it as a place where their grandkids make fun of them.
Did we talk about the Finfluencers before? Where they have TikTok videos and YouTube and...
Not extensively, but what is a Finfluencer, John?
Oh, yeah, those financial influencers where they give advice or they talk about the markets or how to save money, financial products, basically. And they can make a ton of money by getting sponsored or by all their views. So, but they've been prominent on TikTok. But I love that Finfluencer. It's funny to me.
It's not just terrible food. There's also other things as well, like terrible advice.
Probably some are. Yeah.
I'm sure there are.
But there's some, people that make $500,000 on TikTok.
What? I'll have to get on TikTok.
But yeah, I guess that's, I didn't know TikTok was such a boomer thing.
I think it's just a matter of, again, where their grandkids make fun of them. But it just points, I mentioned a few names here, like the Cash App and Venmo and Square and Coinbase, of course. But it points to the importance and the prominence that fintech has gotten across all ages, really, in the U.S. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, I wonder how Robinhood's problems that they had, a year ago now, since it's already December. Yeah, it'll be this time in January of this year that the meme stocks took off. And they kind of had a hit on being not responsible and having operational issues, the system going down. Pretty often, actually. And
customer service, right?
No, yeah, right. Nobody answering, nobody on phones at all for customer service, just emails and is not enough, I guess. But part of that negative hit was the payment for order flow and that kind of becoming more prominent, more looked at by customers and the regulators, right?
So one of the things that actually caused Robinhood a lot of grief last year was their, the fact that they were engaged in what's called payment for order flow, PFOF, P-F-O-F.
Yeah, but essentially they were kind of hiding it.
It was unclear to people how they actually made money, and that's how they make money, which is basically that if I buy shares, if I bid on shares to say $10 or so, Robinhood would then sell that information to a private exchange. So they can act on that information. And that meant in some cases that deals were not executed at the optimum price. So that if I bid, say, $10 and somebody's selling shares at $9.99 or $9.99.9 or something, a fraction of a penny here, the deal would be executed based on the buyer of that data was and not as much on the price itself, which, as you can imagine, although it's really minute, fractions of a penny per transaction and per share, this can really add up. And that's actually how Robinhood made most of their money, is by engaging in these practices. And now it looks like our friend at the SEC, Gary Gensler, is looking to rein in that mechanism so that companies like Robinhood maybe will have less leeway in how much they can engage in PFOF as well.
Huh, so that their whole business model might have to change then, huh?
It may have to. It may be the
lots of advertising in your Robinhood app for coming soon.
So many ads for like Gemini or something on there. It may or may not. I don't think they will do away with PFOF as a mechanism to make money. But what I'm seeing is that there are ways in which you can sort of shorten that delta between the bid and the ask price. And it's actually there's a calculation that I forget now. But it tells you that Robinhood, in most cases, charges on the lower end of what their transaction should be, whereas other exchanges like Webull or Public will actually be higher. So maybe they will become a bit more customer friendly in that regard, at least with pricing. But that also may mean that they may lose or they may not make as much money as they have in the past.
Well, we've been waiting. We've been talking about these new regulators coming in and all kinds of new rules across fintech and the financial industry. So they're finally getting geared up then, huh?
I think it will be.
It takes some time because they have to like really have it for public discussion, and there's a whole long process. So it wouldn't be till it takes a year or two to get these things implemented, right?
It may take a year or more, but I do like that there's going to be some enforcements and some rules to maybe make these apps a bit more friendly to consumer interest and not to their bottom line.
So it's not just a disclosure thing, like they won't make it more prominent how this thing works. It's actually looking at, he was actually looking at limiting somehow, if not banning the practice, yeah?
Yeah, I think the practice is here to stay. That will not be banned. I think it's more looking at the ranges that you can charge and the delta that you can have between a bid and an ask, which again, we're talking about fractions of a percent here, but those do add up, like in Superman 2. So yeah, it's looking at how much of a delta can there be and how much can you prioritize your exchange partner versus your customer.
Yeah, it's funny with so many online brokers already out there that it took Robinhood to expose this practice. I mean, this is pretty common in the industry, but I think Robinhood's much higher use of payment for order flow as the core of their business model really brought it to light. So I'm sure everybody else is like, thanks, Robinhood.
We're thanks doing for fine. The party.
You brought all this attention to this practice. So overall, maybe yeah, like you said, it'll be better for the consumer.
Fingers crossed.
All right. Well, we'll be watching with fingers crossed on what these regulators are doing, what new rules will be out there. Some of it, yeah, I think will drive up costs or get rid of some of the business models that have emerged as there's more disclosure rules and more safety and protecting the customer, that kind of thing. But we'll see what that looks like. But whenever there's change, it's an opportunity. So we can look at it that way. All right, that's it for this episode of the FinTech Newscast. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in FinTech news. And thank you for listening.